Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 304 with Chris Lee.
I've operated in Kraft Foods, which is a high-speed automation factory. So the metrics there were, how do you keep the machine up, the operational efficiency of your machine? How are you reducing downtime on your machine? Compare that to Serta Simmons, which is a manual production line. It's all manual. I got people who are manually flipping beds. I'm telling you right now, someone's personal emotional state dictates how fast they move on the production line. And I found myself there being almost like a cheerleader, a supervisor, and a coach.
This is the first interview I've done with a production supervisor, and it is a fantastic way to start with this career field. Chris does perhaps the best job of any guest I've had on the show of breaking down what this functional role of production supervisor looks like, what it looks like across industries, across different size companies, including pay scales, as well as the specific traits from the military that will help you or hinder you in this career path. We also talk about differences in communication when you leave the military and how to approach this in a way that will be easier for you. We talk about the unpredictability inherent in the civilian job market and how leadership differs from one industry to the next and more. I didn't have a chance to read Chris's bio prior to the recording, so I wanted to give you a quick bio here. He is a production supervisor currently at PCC Structurals, and he spent over 5 years in the functional role of production supervisor in a variety of industries. He started out at West Point and served as an infantry officer in the Army for 8 years with 2 deployments to Afghanistan. As always, at beyonduniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, including a couple in particular references that Chris points out that are worth checking out. You'll also find over 303 other episodes just like this one, so be sure to check those out. With that, let's dive in to my conversation with Chris. Well, joining me today in Portland, Oregon, my guest is Chris Lee. Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Glad to be here, Justin.
So maybe to kick things off, take us back to when you decided to leave the military, what that decision process was like, and what the transition was like, the first job search and just kind of leaving the uniform behind and entering this new life.
Well, I think I accomplished everything that I wanted to do while I was in the Army. I wanted to be deployed. I was fortunate enough to be deployed as a platoon leader in Afghanistan, and then also as the second time as a company commander in Afghanistan. Because anyone who joins the Army, especially in infantry, you want to lead soldiers in combat, and I was able to accomplish that. The other piece is I wanted to stabilize my family because through the deployments, through Ranger School, Airborne School, through other training. You're away from the family a lot, so I wanted to get out, stabilize my family. But the big thing too is, if I stayed longer, I feel like I would have been career committed because I did 8 years. And so after that 8 year point, once you get to the 8-9, you have to make a decision if you want to get out, so that age wise, you're roughly the same as your peers in the civilian market, so that you still have a chance to rise to the level that you want to achieve outside the military. And at the 8 year point, I decided I had enough. I did my full commitment, for my West Point, cause I had 5 years, 3 inactive. So I just did all my 8. And from there, I decided to go to the FBI. Both of my parents are in the federal law enforcement. I was pursuing the federal law enforcement or FBI for 6 months. And then when I got back from my second deployment, I was already submitted the paperwork to get out of the Army. I was told that there was a hiring freeze for the FBI, and I'm like, okay, so they got delayed a little bit. So I'm like, okay. So, I'm getting closer and closer getting out, and about 30 days prior to me getting out, they officially stated, we are no longer accepting applicants, and it may not be open for over a year. So then I'm thinking, like some individuals, well, what do I do? Because I thought I had exactly what I all laid out in my plan. So I was quickly introduced to Lucas Group, which is a military transition headhunter organization. that helps individuals like myself transition out of the military. I was able to quickly go to a conference, a hiring conference. And from there, I was able to see about 8 different interviews for production supervisor to other kind of aspects. And because I was just I was an infantry officer, I've led people, I'm adaptable, all those different characteristics of your basic infantry officer, an easy transition is actually production supervisor. And so my first interview that I had at the conference was with Kraft Foods. I felt like I prepared really well for the interview, not only for my, not only for my own self, but I think Lucas Group did a really good job prepping with the interview questions, the style of questions, and helping that transition where, I haven't really interviewed for a job ever prior to that. So I thought it prepared me really well. Was able to go to Kraft Foods. They liked me. I liked them. And I thought I could be a productive member of their team. And so I accepted with Kraft Foods.
What is, for people who aren't familiar, what is a production supervisor? And walk us through, what was that? What did that look like at Kraft Foods on a day-to-day basis?
So production supervisor, it's similar in the sense for, especially for an infantry officer, even without breaking down, yes, you're responsible for individuals. You're responsible for making sure that your metrics or your targets in that department are being met. Your people are being trained. They're being disciplined. They're there where they need to be. You're involved in the hiring. You're involved in the discipline and the counseling. But not only that, the structure of it is very similar to the military to an extent where when I came in, you saw yourself as a supervisor, kind of like a lieutenant. I had a lead, which is very similar to having a senior person from the ground. So like your platoon sergeant, you have an area manager or a business unit manager who you can look at as a company commander. Then you have operations manager who you can look at as even higher than that, right? Battalion commander and so on. So the structure matched, right? So, so with that, you have a lot of transferable characteristics from infantry leading soldiers and empowering and leading employees to achieve the production requirements. So with that, if you're looking at the day-to-day schedule, you do work a lot of hours. Mm. And when I say that, it's not engineering hours where I show up at 8:30 and leave at 4. You are there when production starts and you're there until production ends. And that range can vary. I've worked 15-hour days. I've also worked shorter days, depending on the amount of production. Typically, currently, I come in at 6 o'clock is when the shift starts. So I show up 15 minutes prior, make sure that everything's ready to go for the shift. You work your stuff on the floor to make sure that you're visible, your presence, you're tackling the daily issues. Obviously, balancing your meetings. But the good thing is I'm out by 4:35. So it's about 10 to 11 hour days. And the expectation for a production supervisor is that you actually, if I need to come in to do something on the off shift, I'll come in. If I need to come in on the weekend to assist production to make sure that we hit our goals, I'm going to come in on the weekends. And sometimes they don't compensate you for coming in. But you do what you need to do to get the job done because you see your peers doing the same amount of work. And it's very rewarding and fulfilling. Because I like to see the actions that I do or the decisions I make have an impact. And with looking at your targets and metrics daily, you actually have a sense of accomplishment. Hey, that one thing that I did caused us to achieve X. Mm. So I feel pretty satisfied in what I do and always helps when you're more successful too. So.
I think this is great. I think you gave an incredible description of this. You're the first production supervisor we've had on the show. And I think that I love how you broke down kind of the chain of command and how that's similar. And walking through the day is very helpful too. What were some of the things that differed from your leadership in the military? Was there anything that you found different or areas that you had to learn and grow because you just didn't deal with that in the military?
So there's a couple of traits from military transition that is going to help anyone going into production supervisor. Mm-hmm. Your work ethic and your reliability is different than some of your peers that you may come across. Your ability to, I have some notes down.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
I apologize on that. But because I think they're really important, your ability to absorb information, right? You absorbing information and have that foundational knowledge will allow you to succeed, because some people you can absorb, but they're already at their cap. They can't really progress further than that. So we typically have a pretty good foundation. We can absorb information pretty rapidly and then apply that information to seeing opportunities and seizing those opportunities rather than losing opportunities. You're either winning or you're losing, and you need to win more than you lose. The other aspect is, yes, in terms of leadership, the big point of a supervisor is to give guidance, point the direction, making sure that the boat is, if we need to go north, then let's go north and make sure everyone on the team is rowing in the correct direction. And then maximizing your employees' potentials. That is what the two big things that you as a leader need to do in a production supervisor role, because you're going to have people who are strong in certain areas. You have people who are weak in certain areas. But how can you maximize their potential, put them in areas that they're going to succeed so they can still be a productive member of the team. But the one thing that I think you have to kind of change your mindset on is communication. Communication in the military, we use a lot of, I call them hard terms, such as, hey, you need to do blank. You know, I'm concise. I'm clear and concise. I'm going to give you a task. I'm going to give you a purpose. And it's kind of cut and dry. And then I'm going to audit you and spot check and make sure that you are on task. If you do stuff like that here, I'm telling you right now, in the civilian area, you have to use those soft words that in the military, it almost shows like a sign of weakness. Because you're like, I think, or, hey, I would really like you if you need, or, hey, you're not sure of yourself. Well, you have to use those soft words because you're working with employees. And the biggest advice I would say is you have to treat all of your employees as if they are a volunteer workforce. Like I'm helping out the Red Cross. I'm working with the volunteer workforce. Do they want to be there? If you treat them like that, then you'll be fine. If you treat them as if they are your employees and that they, if you don't treat them correctly, they're going to make or break you and make you successful or not. You have to establish that relationship. And if you don't establish that relationship, you're going to fail. And I have seen peers fail at that. And even myself, I have failed at that. I've been in this industry for over 5 years, almost close to 6 years now. My first year out of the military was very hard because it took me a while to understand that communication aspects. And once you lose some of that early on, it's hard to regain even after you learn. But now, thankfully, I've learned it, and I am very successful in that now.
That's great. I mean, I love the distinctions there of these traits that help you, and then the softer language. And I think it's great to give people that visual of like volunteering with the Red Cross. I think that's perfect. That kind of, for me, it kind of clicks of like, oh yeah, I would kind of talk to people a little bit differently. And I think that's, I could see how that would make a big difference. I also wanted to, you know, you've been in this space for 5 years. You've done operations, production leadership roles in a lot of different industries. You've done metal cast parts, you've done concrete, you've done mattresses and food. Does the role differ as a production supervisor based on the product, or like I'm trying to get at what has been similar, and then what is different, or what do you need to learn or change as you've switched industries?
Well, I want to answer a question you haven't asked that pertains prior to what you just said.
Yeah.
Because you just listed out, I have been in a lot of industries. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I've been in this thing for 6 years. I've been at 4 to 5 places. Now, think of this. I got out of the military for transition because I wanted to stabilize my family. Well, you have Kraft Foods, who, in all honesty, based off of some of my learnings and also some of the leadership style that I've interacted with, it was almost like a mutual separation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But shortly after that, Kraft Foods got bought off by Kraft Heinz. So all my peers were let go. Right. So then I got closer to California, or closer to California without being in California. Side note. I went over to Curtis Simmons, and I was there for 2 years. But in order for me to progress, I would have to move outside of where I was located. If I wanted a production manager role in that same industry. And I didn't want that. I wanted to stay local. I wanted to stabilize. So after my 2 years there, had a very good relationship over there. I was a production manager because higher pay, higher area responsibility in a local area. And that's how I ended up in Concrete. However, right when I got hired, they had a change in president. They changed some of the structuring. 10 months later, they rechanged their name, reorganized, decided that they didn't need production managers in that role. And now I'm laid off. So I ended up being here in Portland, right? Because I still want to go local. So I only say that as a baseline. So it's a transferable skill. It does not matter if we're managing concrete, if you're managing food, if you're managing mattresses. The foundational aspects of a supervisor are still the same. Mm-hmm. All the traits that made you successful in one industry is going to make you successful in another industry. The only difference is it's each area requires a certain amount of focus, right? There's some industries that are people focused. There's some industries that are machine focused. There's some areas that are really knowledge focused. Concrete is a very knowledge based thing. So the more you know about concrete, the better performance you're going to be. I've operated in Kraft Foods, which is a high speed automation factory. So the metrics there were, how do you keep your machine up, the operational efficiency of your machine? How are you reducing downtime on your machine? Compare that to Serta Simmons, which is a manual production line. It's all manual. I got people who are manually flipping beds. I'm telling you right now, someone's personal emotional state dictates how fast they move on the production line. And I found myself there being almost like a cheerleader, a supervisor, and a coach, right? And it requires a different mindset for now the concrete industry. I was over supervisors, right? And we don't have a production line. We have different departments that pour concrete. There's certain phases, but it's not really a production line. It's more in individual forms and so on. Similar to my role right now, I had machines at Precision Cast Parts. So it's not a production flow. So that changes things. Now it's about how are you efficient, how are you managing different things. But so it is the same, but it's not. Each industry has different characteristics. But again, they're all transferable.
I think that's such great distinction, though. I wouldn't have thought of that. And I love how you tease out the differences in the type of leader you need to be and even where the focus would be. And even for listeners, if they're interested in this sort of work, that starts to give you a sense of the different industries and maybe one of those appeals to you more. Maybe you like the automation more. Maybe you like the manual part. And man, it seems like you've gotten between the military and this, you've gotten this PhD in leadership and understanding, like, based on the environment you're in, what does the organization need and how do you support the organization or the team or the people to accomplish that objective? And it's the nuance that you're adding there is really exceptional.
Well, and I would also mention that, I had a great thing and then now it kind of went away.
It happens to me all the time.
No, but again, I think it's good. But the other aspect of production, right? So yes, production supervisor, right? There are other jobs and functions in operations as a whole that is not just defined as supervisor. Because you have the ability, once you have your foot in the door, your production supervisor is really the foot in the door in an operations or industrial an industry, right? So you have to interact with, or you get the opportunity to act with your quality. You get to interact with logistics, distribution, drivers, receivers, things of that nature, vendors. You get to deal with salespeople, project managers, engineering, whether it's product engineering that we're doing in Precision Cast Parts, or whether it's with manufacturing engineering and we are trying to establish a new machine for our department, right? You deal with human resources, you deal with corporate. I've had to deal with multiple vendors and you get exposed to all of that, project managers. You get to deal with all of that more than just supervisors. So if later on you decide, you know what, I wouldn't mind working in planning or in sales or in quality or continuous improvement or whatever aspect that you decide is your niche. You have exposure to all of that.
That's great. One thing I wanted to ask is, so I appreciate how earlier you kind of talked about the realities of the job market, right? Like you leave Kraft Foods, and had you stayed there due to circumstances completely out of your control, you most likely would have been out of a job. Yes. And then there's so many for listeners who have guaranteed job stability, albeit with a lot of variability and where you're at and a little control of what you have. I love that distinction of on the other side, there's no certainties. But I wanted to ask about any advice you have around job search. So it sounds like you got your first job through Lucas Group. And I'm curious, for each of the places that you've been at, how did you find out about that opportunity? How did you get that job? And currently, it sounds like you're working for another military veteran. Were these introductions? Did you use Lucas Group again? Or how did you come to find these opportunities?
Yeah, so we already discussed the Kraft, right? Lucas Group. And what I'll also say is, within 4 weeks of that interview that I had with Lucas Group at Kraft Foods, I was currently in Missouri working a job. So I still had, it was getting double dipping between my Army pay and the transition to Kraft Foods. So it can be a quick transition. So when I left Kraft Foods, I went with another headhunting group, but it was not a military veteran base. It wasn't like a Lucas Group. It was, I think, the Judge Group. And there are headhunters who specifically look for production supervisors. Mm. So it's not as broad, but they really look for production supervisors. They got me in connection with someone upstairs, or not upstairs, up in Washington or Oregon. And strangely enough, the person who was at Curtis Simmons, he was a former Ranger, and he told me he was specifically looking for West Point infantry officers. Guess what? I checked the block on all of those. And when I got hired with him, I'm just going to tell you quick, when I got hired with him, because you having a good relationship with your immediate boss or your manager really defines your career in that position. Because just like in the military, if you have a poor relationship with your company commander, your battalion commander, you're probably not going to want to stay in that army. You're probably going to get out or transition or whichever. And everyone has a unique experience. You have some managers at Kraft Food. I don't feel like I was very supportive. At Curtis Simmons, I felt like I was very supportive. And he gave me an opportunity. He said, hey, no one could take over this one department. They've been through three supervisors. And so if you can take the bull by the horn and control this department and make it work, you can do anything else in this department or anything else in this company. I was able to make that work. So then again, we were looking for, so it's been 2 years, had a great time over there. But again, it's one of those things where in Kraft Foods, the larger, we call it the mega plant, the larger organization that you're currently in allows for more upward momentum, up more mobility, right? I can go be a business unit manager. I could be an operations manager. Well, at the Curtis Simmons plant, it was supervisors reporting to the plant manager. So in order for me to go up the next level, I literally had to wait for someone to either get fired, pass away, move on, retire. That's why I would have to go out state in order to achieve my continuing upward. So at that point, I just put in my resume on monster.com, put some stuff in LinkedIn, just to see what was out there. Didn't even apply for anything. Didn't really reach out to a Lucas Group or anything. And I was contacted by their headhunter group, Oldcastle. So there are headhunter groups within corporations that do the same thing as military transitions. So I had to do nothing. Next thing you know, I'm doing an interview, and things worked out well. From the transition from Oldcastle to Precision Cast Parts, I went through both. I did a bunch of LinkedIn. I made sure my profile was updated. I shot personal emails out, right, to certain recruiters and so on. Nothing really. I had some interviews. I had some that I went pretty far on. But the thing, once you get to the higher level, You have to have a bunch of experience. So me with only 10 months of production management experience kind of limit who I went through and so on. But anyway, at the end of the day, I had to apply a bunch of my individual self. I went through Lucas and some other ones, but the one that I ultimately ended up in, Prusin Caspar, is something that I just applied myself. Mm. And I actually applied for a product manager role. And they were like, I don't know if I want you for a product manager role, but you fit perfectly for either an area manager or a supervisor position. So that's when I said, well, because at the time in reality, I've done supervisor. I feel like I checked the block. I was a production manager. I want to continue going. So area manager, sure, sign me up. But in some of the industries, it's very hard, even though you have a bunch of experience, even though you have your military background, to go into an industry at the mid-level and be successful, because each company has a different culture. PCC has a different culture than Kraft Foods, which had a different culture than Serta. And so that's why, working my way back up.
I think it's great though, because, from an outside perspective, it seems like you've committed to like a certain functional role. And yeah. I see in your path, you're experimenting with industries, you're experimenting with size of companies. I love that you pointed out that, hey, one of the advantages of working for a company like Kraft is there is no end to upward mobility. But if you work at a smaller company, you either have to hire a hitman to assassinate your boss to get that position. Otherwise, it's not going to open up. And so I love that as you take these different positions, you're learning about the industry, the size, the culture, which you pointed out, which is huge. You're gathering this information and clarifying what exactly you want. And I imagine that that's going to be different for every person because we all want different things. And so you've had exposure to different geographic areas. Like you've had all of these different things that starts to inform you of like, what is it exactly that I want to do next? And I think that's great. That seems representative of a lot of these interviews where there's a lot of meandering to really pinpoint what one wants.
Yeah, and if you know what you want, then you can better find an industry to meet that need, right? If I had no desire to stay in Portland for a long period of time, then I probably would not have picked this position, right? Yep. Or there may be other opportunities that you can do, and you're like, hey, I get my experience, grow, learn, and then go to wherever you want it to be long term. Mm-hmm. But again, where I'm right now, it has exactly what I need. I'm in a very good position to be in the area manager role for a mentoring and so on. And I really enjoy the people I work with. I feel like I have a team that supports me. I enjoy the employees I work with. I enjoy my peers. So it's good to see different industries.
Hmm. And let's say you're walking down the streets of Portland, you bump into a fellow veteran and they say, hey, Chris, what is it you do for a living? How would you explain your current role, but also the company that you work at? Would you explain both of those?
I would say that, obviously as a production supervisor, I'm managing employees, but employees is a aspect. But I think the biggest thing is you are a paid problem solver.
Hmm.
I problem solve all day long. And it keeps me busy too. If I'm sitting in my office and I'm like, what should I do right now? Then I'm probably failing at my job because I have so much on my to-do list. I should always be busy. And if I had to describe the company I am in and the environment I am, I would say it's someone who demands success, right? Because in all honesty, this environment, certain industries, right? Some industries are a little more lax. This industry, they prepare their supervisors here for a very big picture mentality. Mm-hmm. Because we go into the weeds of the costs, our efficiencies, our productivities, all the metrics. So it's really providing me a good opportunity for the next level to be successful at the next level and then some. So again, not only do I feel like I'm problem solving, I feel like I'm constantly being mentored and prepared for my next opportunity. So it's a good place to work.
That's awesome. I imagine it varies by industry and by company, but I wanted to ask about helping listeners understand the landscape in terms of progression. And you've mentioned a couple of things. There's production supervisor, there's production supervisor 2, and area manager. Could you help them understand what are some of the positions, and then how do people generally progress? Like, is there a goal? Is there a commanding officer type position, or what does that look like?
Well, you let me know if I can integrate two.
Yeah.
Two in one.
Yep.
Because I think you also have to look at potential compensation for as we go up, right? So I'm going to integrate that before I talk about what the actual opportunities are.
Yeah.
Because there's some, especially from being a West Point officer, being in the infantry for 8 years, I was making fairly good money as a captain. It's not even a secret, right? You could look it up on Google, you know, what an O3 with 8 years plus V8, you know, your housing allowance, what we make. And so somehow we got into our heads that, oh man, I'll get out and companies are willing to pay me six figures and it'll be great. Now, for certain industries, whether you're financing industries, some engineering industries, some other different things that may not be production operations, that may be the case for, I know for some of my peers, I'm hearing really good stories. But in terms of production, it's actually a pretty significant pay cut to start with. So as a soup one, they typically start on swing shift because they're learning the industry. Day shift supervisors need to be able to speak the business. And they may not have that experience. Now, sometimes based off of like my experience in the military, being a company commander, I got hired straight as a soup two. So the pay scale can range from 65 to 85, right? And considering your captive, you take out your housing and everything else, you're making in that 95 plus range, right? And you don't know what the impact is until you actually get your first couple of months under you. And you're like, wow, this is different, you know, because now I got to pay for my medical, now I got to pay for all these other different things. So either way, after your supervisor level, right, you typically, and again, you can look at that as your lieutenant as a soup one, your executive officer as a soup two. And then you have, if you're in a large mega complex facility, it's separated by departments, right, or they call them, or units or whichever. Then you have area managers. You are a manager over a certain area of the industry. Not the whole plant, just a area, or a business unit manager. Kraft Foods, I was in the pasta division or department. So the area manager the business unit manager was over supervisors, right? That's all that it is. You're either an area manager or your business unit manager, or you're even a production manager, which I was at the Old Castle. At the end of the day, all those three are relatively the same because you're all responsible for supervisors. You have to have multiple supervisors who are under you, who report to you. And the good thing about the area manager role or the production manager when I was there, you have even more impact on what you're in control of, right? Of your department, of the direction, of empowering your employees, of coaching and mentoring your supervisors, things of that nature. And it's kind of like the commander equivalent or the captain equivalent. Outside of that, then if you have multiple production managers or multiple area managers, if they're reporting up higher than that, it's an operations manager role. An operations manager is in charge of all operations or a set of operations where they have multiple area managers reporting to that operation manager, right? So he doesn't have supervisors. He's in charge of all the different area managers under him. So that would be the next progression. Now, in terms of, again, compensation wise, you have the 65 to 85 range for supervisors, area managers, you get the 85 to 105 type of thing. And then you get higher than that, then it's 100 and man, keep on going down to plant managers. They're making fairly significant. Now for progression, this isn't a big plant. If you're in a small plant, I was doing interviews for, a 40 person plant manager role. So you can go straight from experienced supervisor or production manager and go straight to a plant manager, right? It all depends on the scope and the range and the size of people that you're in charge of, right? Because again, you have the principal, but obviously the larger plants require larger experience, larger backgrounds. 40, 50 size plant, yeah, you get all the big picture understandings, your costs, your variable, all those, and you can pursue that. The other thing with these type of industries compared to others is you actually do not only your base pay, you do get compensated in terms of bonuses, right? Depending on how your individual plant performs, you may get from a annually, you may get a $2,000 bonus, or you may get a $20,000 bonus, yeah, whatever you're actively making. So there is some benefits to that as well, where you may not see in other industries.
If there in 303 episodes, if there is a Hall of Fame for best answers to a landscape question, you just got it. I love that. I love the detail of the compensation, and I love the insight that it is like, you know, you can be a supervisor at a massive company, which may be about the same as a plant manager at a smaller company. Like, there are the distinctions based on the size of company. And so I think that's helpful for them to see that progression. And I appreciate your adding those numbers in, because that's good for people to know too. Like, if you're an O3 getting out and you go this route, initially you may be making less. And it's, you know, in my view, it's kind of about the long view. Like, one, do you like the work? Are you satisfied in it? Does it give you the lifestyle you want? And what does it look 5 years out, 10 years out? Maybe you're paying your dues right now, and down the road, you're going to be making a fantastic living, versus there are industries where you can get comparable pay to what you did in the military, but there may not be the same advancement over time that you're wanting.
Yeah, and in all honesty, your individual background and experience really sets you apart too. It's not if you are a soup one, you get blank. Because I'm doing fairly well now, even though I'm the same title, I'm doing much, much better than I was year one with the same title, right? Because now I have some background support. I have some production management experience. I was able to go get my master's while I was in between all this. So I was able to get my MBA. So I have a lot of foundation, because sometimes when they hire you, they look at not only what can you do now, but what are you going to be able to contribute later on? And if you can be a future leader of that company, and if you can show that demonstration through previous, previous results, right? And you have the foundation to grow into something that they may want long term, then in all honesty, they're able to compensate you for that ahead of time, which may be different than the person to your left or person to your right or to your own self 5 years ago. And so that's why, again, I'm very happy with what I do. I'm pay wise much better than when I first came in. And again, I'm being tailored for the next level up very, very soon, but it's working out real well.
You mentioned MBA, and I know a lot of listeners always like to hear about certifications, things like that. I don't know if like Six Sigma certification, or could you speak to kind of like degrees or certifications that would be beneficial either actually in helping with the job or the perception of being more qualified for this route?
Well, I think you said it right there. Some of it's perception, right? Some of it's actual application. For your MBA, or if you got your master's, it's kind of like your college. All it really does is it allows you to have some basic concepts of big picture stuff. And it allows you to have a foundational support so that if you have to do higher level position, it gives confidence to those that are trying to hire you that you're up for the task. You can put in the hours, you can do whatever you need to do in order to be successful at that net level, right? It's just like a foundational baseline. Now, in terms of certificates, I do have my green belt certification in Lean Six Sigma. Do you need that in the industry? Yes and no. I had enough experience without that certificate based off my previous experience in the industries. I think it's very helpful for an individual who may have no concept of practical hands-on manufacturing or production experience, so that when they do become in that role, they can be even a faster learner, because a lot of my experience was just through hands-on. We've had coaches come in and teach the supervisors. I've done multiple Kaizen events, Kanban systems, Lean Six Sigma projects, you name it. I've had to implement those things, because one of the fortunate things is that each industry is at different levels of success. Lean, Six Sigma, all those different things. I've heard it called, you have the, whether it's continuous improvement, other different areas, but it's all useful because in industries that are trying to roll it out, they need you on board. And the biggest thing that you can do is just be flexible. Don't be a pessimistic individual who like, I don't see any value in this, because I'm telling you right now, they're going to get on that bus and you better be on it, because at the end of the day, they are trying to achieve something or some type of vision under the lean stuff. And so if you don't understand it, or if you don't get it, or if you become bitter, then are you really helping? You're not setting yourself up for success or anything. So I've been in multiple industries that actually transitioned. They're like, we're going to start it, and now we're transitioning. I mean, in Kraft Foods, we went from a horizontal manufacturing, a horizontal management, which means I'm a second shift supervisor. So I'm in charge of all 13 of my machines and production lines on this shift between 2:30 and 10:30. Hmm. Well, in a vertical management style, well, now I'm in charge of these two machines for all three shifts. So now that is my machine. Now I control the standards of and all the employees for all three shifts. And it, you get better handoff, you get better ownership and things of that nature. So again, I think it helps in terms of understanding the principle. But once you've been doing it for a couple of years, it's really just to validate, yep, I have officially the academic requirement of the belt system.
Well, I love this sense of growth too. It sounds like you're talking about this mindset of being willing to grow and learn and evolve versus I can imagine some people are like, yeah, I'm good where I'm at. Honestly, I've heard a lot about Six Sigma. I'm not as familiar with that. Could you talk about the way I understand it is it's just like in karate, there's different belts. So you're a green belt. Yeah. Could you talk about, what did it take to get green belt certified? Obviously the training before, but is it are you doing this online? Is there a written examination? Do you have to go to a class for a week? What does that look like?
So you have a couple different options. Some companies, Kraft Foods, would actually, they have their own certification program. Precision Cast Parts, they have their own online education. So you can take the online courses and be certified that way. I was certified through a 5-day process. Mm-hmm. There's X amount of hours in the course and you have to take a test at the end for the green belt. And how it starts is really have a white belt is like just an introductory into it. Yellow belt's basically the introductory plus maybe some applications. The green belt, they talk about basically all the academic. You get more into the numbers, how you get your calculations, how you graph it out, but a more concept still, but just more in depth. And then once you get to their black belt, it's taking your concept, now you're putting it into practical application. Hmm. Now you actually have to do an actual project, and you have to show a reduction in whatever you were trying to do within the range. Hmm. So how we look at it from a production aspect, we don't look at it really much as a Six Sigma aspect, which is trying to get it within a very minute variability. Majority of production really focuses on lean, right? How you get rid of the waste, how you get rid of redundant systems or non-value added aspects. How do you look at your line, have some lean tools where you can do you can value stream map, you can walk the flow and see where can you reduce it. How do you make, instead of the operator leaving their station, walking 20 feet and then coming back to, how do you make that tool right at the operator station so they don't walk 20 feet? Those type of small improvements, and that's why you hear more continuous improvement, right? It's just small little steps. And so you have Kaizen events, which are similar, right? Where you may have a week long, it could be a 48-hour period long. So some are more formal. Others are, hey, it's really your initiative. What are you seeing? Where are those opportunities? And do you have that mindset to try to eliminate waste? I don't want to have over inventory. I don't want things sitting. I don't want to have over transportation, all those other different aspects so that I can be more efficient, reduce my indirect labor, increase my efficiency. And as example, I had something happen at my department where two of the hoist systems had a remote that synchronized with the hoist. The third one did not. So you have to manually adjust it and then use the controller. Well, over time, guess what? Someone forgets to do something, part falls off and breaks. So now how do you get with maintenance? How do you synchronize it? How do you prevent human error, right? How do you poke yoke is what they call it, right? How do you reduce that human error so that you're 100% successful each time and you're not just lucky?
What was that phrase? Poke a yoke.
Yeah, it's just a small, you know, how do you make it so that you reduce human error?
That's great. What about, are there any, I always like to ask about resources. So someone's listening, they're fired up around this career path. Is there any book or podcast or movie or conference or something they should check out that would help them learn about this or has helped you?
What has helped me, and it didn't help prior to, because in honesty, a lot of it's learning, right? But now after doing it a little while, I'm big on the communication piece of that. Mm. Now, every time I have an employee interaction, I'm making sure that, how are you interacting with them? How are you being personable with them? How are you making sure you're communicating what you want and get your intent done without having drama, because you have different levels of emotional states for your employees. And the biggest book that I have, I'm going to actually throw it up the camera, Four Essential Keys to Effective Communication. Okay. And one of the reasons why I think this is actually very important, because we have a mentor here and I had to read that, is it actually has a 12-day communication challenge. And so it allows concepts that conceptually you understand, but you have to do it in practice. And then you have to think about that specific aspect and then try to find a time in the conversation throughout the day that relates to that. And you kind of write it down in your journal. And you do it 12 days. And through that repetition, through that daily cadence, I feel like it's almost second nature trying to work it. Rather than walking the floor, you get into your rhythm and then you're like, oh man, that's right. I think I was too blunt with that one person, or I may have snapped at that one person because they're making a mistake or whichever, you know. It causes you not to just randomly think about it, but to really constantly think about how you're communicating with everyone around you, so that everyone's being a better member of the team, right? Because you don't want bad employees. You don't want employees to get upset. And you don't want anyone having them call HR on you because you're being mean.
That's great. I mean, I love the practical nature of that, of literally applying each principle during that day. And I also think it's great to know that, you know, so it seems like so much of your job is leadership. And I love how you're deepening that through finding better ways to communicate. That's really admirable. I know we're short on time, so I always like to leave the last question open-ended. And you can take that either as, what have we not covered that you want to make sure listeners know, or what's something that you'd like to leave them with before we wrap up?
I would say that if you are new to this industry, especially as a military, whether a military officer, an NCO, or you're transitioning, I'm telling you right now, the first 2 years, you may feel like all of the foundational leadership skills that you have learned may actually be flipped upside down. Hmm. You're going to see leaders who you don't know how they're in that role. They may be mentoring you on a leadership style that is foreign to you, or may actually go against your foundation principles. So take the good and take the bad. Don't get frustrated. Be able to absorb and reflect on how you're individually, because if you asked me my first year, I would have said, no, I was perfect. I was amazing. No, in retrospect, you know, yeah, I think I could have done things differently. I think I could have handled that situation that wouldn't have resulted in that something happening. And so how do you reflect on that? How you overcome that and don't see the people aspect of it? Because obviously there's still people issues, but it's different than Army people issues, right? I'm not dealing with someone not paying their child support. I'm not dealing with a suicide that I got to drive and personally bring them to the hospital. They're different people issues, and they're minor. They're minor maybe potentially to you, but to the individual, it's major. right? So make sure you give them the time of day and make sure you really focus on that. Because again, I keep emphasizing that people is going to make you successful, going to make your department successful. And that's going to make people want to work in your environment.
That's great. I love the, it's almost like a sense of being recalibrated, being open to be recalibrated as you leave and realizing, I love the way that you said that. It's like being flipped upside down. Like a lot of the principles, a lot of the values may be different. And it sounds like there's some sort of importance of being open to that. And then there's some importance to kind of getting some distance and figuring out, is this what I want to know long-term? But I love the way that you said that of like, in retrospect, you realized you would have done things differently during that first year. And so I love just cultivating this mindset for listeners of in that first year, being open to learning, trying new things and realizing that it may seem like you're doing the wrong thing, but in, you know, with a half a decade of experience, you might realize that they do these things this way for a reason.
Yeah. And again, I tell people I enjoy what I do. I feel, as you said, right, is, you know, is grass pretty green here? It is. I'm very happy with what I'm doing. I'm happy with the people I work with. I'm happy. I get satisfaction every day of what I do. So I can't really complain.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you for sharing your story with Beyond the Uniform today.
No, thank you, Justin. I'm glad to be here and I'm glad I can contribute. Hopefully it helps someone in the future.
Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly, and the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.